Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking science, research, and education with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. And as we visit about all kinds, we got budget things to talk about. We can talk about races to the top. And, of course, we'll take your questions and comments as we move along. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And, Bassam, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Larry.
Let's talk about the president's fiscal year 2011 budget. It includes increases for science and education. And pretty much the rest of the discretionary budget, I think, is flat. What are the increases in science and in education for, and what's Congress likely to do?
This is a breath of fresh air to see the president and the administration make such a proposal to support innovations in science and technology and in education. You know, it's the old adage, the president proposes and the Congress disposes. So the fiscal year begins in October 1st, 2010. Between now and then, a lot of other things are on the congressional agenda. And, of course, this is a congressional election year, too.
Yeah.
So I would like to be optimistic about the outcome of this excellent budget that the president and the administration have put forward. Increases are for research and development activities in science, NIH, the National Science Foundation, Department of Energy, emphasizing green chemistry, for example,
mm-hmm.
Providing fellowships for students at the graduate level or the undergraduate level, programs that encourage the excellence in teaching in science and mathematics at the pre-collegiate level in high schools, middle schools. It's all across the spectrum. And I looked at the budget details. They look very promising, very encouraging. And now let's see what happens with the Congress. I'd like to be optimistic about it, but the deficit is very large in the federal budget. And as a scientist, as an educator, I'm happy with this proposed budget. As a citizen, I look at the overall picture, and then I see the huge debt that we are putting onto our children, grandchildren. So it isn't that I have mixed feelings about this. I think science and technology are the engines that drive our economy.
That's what gets us out of the debt, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. And if the funds are appropriated and used wisely, I think this a lot of good can come out of this.
What about this Race to the Top program? Challenge states to compete. They have $4 billion out there. 41 states submitted applications, including Wisconsin, but we were not among the 16 finalists. Why didn't we make the cut?
That's a good question, Larry.
There have been some discussion about it.
Lots of discussion. Lots of discussion about it. Let me just say briefly what the Race to the Top program is.
Yes.
It was actually announced by President Obama right here in Madison at Wright Middle School last year. This is a program to get the states to do more for education at all pre-college levels, you know, high school, middle school, and so on. It's a competition. It's not a handout. Let me just use crass terms here. It's a competition for funds to alter the ways in which education happens in the school systems. And all states were invited to submit proposals in this competition. 41 submitted proposals. 16 were selected. There are certain requirements. There are certain strings attached to this. And Wisconsin was not one of the 16 that are chosen. There are issues that relate to Milwaukee public school system, issues that relate to the relationship between the Department of Public Instruction and the teachers' union. There are all kinds of issues, very important issues. And just because Wisconsin was not selected for this competition, it does not mean we should not be paying attention to these issues. The important point is not to get the money. The important point is what to do if you were to get the money. And since we are not part of the next round, I'm sure there'll be more in fiscal. I know there is more in fiscal 2011 that President Obama has put together for the Department of Education. I really feel strongly that the legislature, the governor, all concerned citizens should put their shoulders together and try to develop strategies that are effective to help all school districts in Wisconsin. But in particular, I want to put special emphasis on the Milwaukee Public School System. The Milwaukee Public School System is the largest in our state, and it is entrusted with the responsibility of educating people from different economic backgrounds. And it is very, very important that we have high-quality education there and that we have good teachers attracted to Milwaukee to participate in this process. Last year, you may remember, I made a proposal to calling on institutions of higher education in the state of Wisconsin to graduate 200 teachers every year that will be contracted to teach in Milwaukee Public School, not just in science and mathematics, in all areas. So, I'd like to renew this. The president of the UW system, the independent colleges that we have excellent institutions of higher education, and I think we should try to focus on how we can produce and place and retain high-quality teachers in the Milwaukee public school system. People in the listening audience all over the state and in neighboring states, I think, have an interest in making sure that the largest metropolitan area we have has high-quality education. All stakeholders should participate in this process. Race to the top, I think, is but one mechanism that will help us do better than what we are doing. And I don't want this to be a gloom and doom such a story. Sure. It's not. You know, we have great pockets of excellence all over our state. But we have to pay attention to those areas that can improve, that should improve. And that's going to happen, of course, with having proper strategies in place and then having the funds to implement those strategies.
Mm. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, as we talk about science research, science education with him. If you'd like to join in, and I hope you do, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call or shoot us an email. This is another topic I wanted to get on to. And then we can just kind of come back to all the topics we've been talking about. But you got five people from Madison who are going to be honored at the spring meeting of the American Chemical Society in San Francisco. Four are your colleagues in the UW-Madison Chemistry Department. The fifth is a colleague in my department, Life Sciences Communication, and also a writer for the Wisconsin State Journal, Ron Seeley. And I think it's just great. Maybe you can talk about those.
It is just fantastic. The American Chemical Society is the largest single discipline organization in the world. And these awards that are given annually are the most prestigious in all the chemical sciences. And we have, as you said, five people from the Madison area, four in the chemistry department, all colleagues of mine and yours. Professor Larry Dahl is receiving an award for his contributions to synthetic inorganic chemistry. Professor Helen Blackwell is receiving a very prestigious award for her research on organic chemistry and bacteria-related issues. Professor Clark Landis is receiving an award for organometallic chemistry research. And Professor Martin Zanni and his student are receiving a mentoring award, which is really terrific. It's called the Nobel Laureate Signature Award for Graduate Education in Chemistry. And Marty Zanni, my colleague, is the preceptor, and his student, his graduate student, Sang-hee Shim, who's now a postdoc at Harvard, is receiving this award. But then, as you said, Ron Seeley from the Wisconsin State Journal and from the Department of Life Science Communications has been honored, is being honored by the James Grady and James Stack Award for Interpreting Chemistry for the Public. And Ron's writings in the State Journal on issues related to science and the environment are just fantastic. This is the first time that a newspaper with this size circulation has one of its reporters receive this award. This award has been received by a variety of people who went on to get the Pulitzer Prize. Some of them have been Nobel laureates and so on. So this is really just great. I'm just tickled pink that the ACS has exercised good judgment in selecting Ron for this award.
And he's a great teacher, too. I know he teaches in our department. My Department of Life Sciences Communication teaches science writing. And it's pretty tough to get into that class. It fills up in a hurry. The word is around that he's an excellent teacher. Well, I tell you what, I've got other things I wanted to talk to you about. And speaking, well, this whole business about communicating science is kind of interesting to me as well, because there are Ron Seeley types out there, but I think we could do a better job of communicating science to the public.
Well, it is the responsibility of the scientists, of course, to practice science, but also to communicate science. I think it's a dual responsibility. And I'd like to see more graduate students, more postdoctoral fellows, more faculty pay attention to communicating science to the general public. We all know about the situation with the print media. Circulations are going down. Mm-hmm. But on the air, we have you on your show, on your program, Larry. You have a whole slew of people who talk about science, whether it's agriculture, the
environment,
the weather, things that take care how to dispose of chemicals, household chemicals properly, and so on. So I think this is really good. But we need more people who are scientists to take a bigger interest, a deeper interest in communicating science to the general public. There are a whole slew of fabulous, fantastic discoveries that are being made. Just looking at the New York Times and other newspapers, here's a headline from yesterday. Scientists see fresh evidence of more water on the moon. Reporting on such discoveries, trying to communicate how the evidence is gathered to really say that there are so many kilograms of water underneath the South Pole of the moon. And now they say maybe in the North Pole. Understanding science, reporting on science is really a very important responsibility that scientists and other people in the media have.
Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, our guest today as we talk science education and science research. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today as we talk with him about science research and education. Glad to have you listening in here on the Ideas Net, and join us with your questions, 1-800-642-1234.
Larry, I'm really curious to hear the perceptions of people in the listening audience as to what happened to this race to the top situation that has been discussed in Wisconsin lately. And, you know, is this something that people care about? Obviously, I care about it, but are there people in the listening audience who might want to call in and make a comment about this? It's rather important to be vigilant in paying attention to the quality of education in our state. We're doing a good job overall. There are areas that need more attention. We really should live up to this challenge and try to deal with it. So be eager to hear from people about this.
And another comment or question, or a different question, I believe, comes from Nancy in Hadley. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Professor Shakashiri, first of all, thank you so much for your Once Upon a Christmas Cheery show that you do every year. And I believe you just had the magnesium anniversary. Was that it, if I remember correctly?
Well, we actually had zirconium, element number 40.
I knew it was 40. I couldn't remember which one it was, zirconium. And my son loves that show. I was wondering how you would go about getting tickets to that.
thank you kindly for your interest in our public communication of chemistry program. Mm-hmm. This is an annual event that's done around Christmas time. And so it'll be the first weekend in December. Mm-hmm. And we post on our website the way by which you can request free tickets. By the way, all of these activities that we do are free and open to the public.
You have to get tickets, though, in order to assure a seat. Isn't that it?
Yeah, we get a lot of people interested in coming. We issue tickets to control the size of the crowd so that no one shows up and doesn't find a seat.
Doesn't get in, yeah.
You know, we get people from all over the state and from Chicago, from Minneapolis, from our neighboring states as well. So I would invite you to look at our website, which is scifund.org, you know, www.scifund.org, for an announcement sometime in September, beginning in, you know, September when school year starts again. And there'll be instructions on how to get tickets for this.
Great.
And the website, I might just add that if your son is really interested in this sort of thing, the website has many activities, and Bassam could explain better than me.
We have home experiments that you and your children can do with your parents as well. We have experiments that are safe to do at home, and the whole idea is to engage the family in meaningful learning activities. So go to our website in the upper left corner, browse around first, but look in the upper left corner. Experiments you can do at home. Try them out, and if you like them, let us know. If you don't, also let us know.
All right. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Let's turn to Greg in Manches. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
It's a great program. One of the things I wanted to say is that I'm 59, and the development of the way broadcasting news, with the exception of NPR, has been so politicized around science that you can't even get a notification of, let's say, what the FDA is doing and this or that off of the mainstream media, which is a real difference between when I was a much younger man. And in our house, I wanted to run home and watch the Flintstones in the evening. My parents, if there was anything pertaining to science, they'd say, oh, no, from this time to this time, this is what's on, and that's it. And I'm really glad that they did. It helped to create a real curious kid in me. But that's no longer the case, and you have to search out all the details on the Internet. And I'm wondering what your guest has to say about that.
Okay.
That's a good observation, Greg. Yes, we are deluged by all kinds of information and, I dare say, distractions. So what we have to do is be focused and be selective in what we look for. In fact, the Internet can be a good source of good information. Not everything on the Internet is good, all right? But as you said, we have to search and find what we're looking for. If you are indeed looking for information from EPA or Food and Drug Administration or information about climate change and so on, there are excellent websites. They are actually put up by the government. You just go to the EPA.gov or FDA.gov. It's all over the place. But as you say, we have to be selective about it.
Can I follow up briefly?
Sure.
The big concern I have is that these issues have faded so much from the public imagination as a result of these shifts that because I'm kind of this compulsive learner, I look at everything that I think is important. But when I talk to people that I know have interests in common to me, they're shocked at what they don't know. They don't even know that there are issues there, and I think that that's the problem. If we could somehow get the media to point out the kind of websites, I mean the mainstream media, then we would really serve the broader public and our long-term goals more, because there's a whole lot of controversial moves between some special interests and things that jeopardize the environment and organic crops and everything. And even people at an organic market that I frequent are clueless.
You make good points, Greg, and let me just say clearly that it's important to scrutinize issues like the ones you mentioned in detail, and that can't be done by simply looking at your telephone screen or looking at your Twitter. You have to read. I'm a big advocate of reading all sides of an issue, and that can be done through publications like Scientific American, for example, or Popular Science. But in the mainstream media, there is coverage. There's good coverage of the environment, of science. So it's not only the internet. It's not only television. I think reading books and reading about such issues is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Your challenge to me, Greg, as I hear it, is how do you get people to do that? And so
Well, there's so many choices. You know, 20 years ago, you had three networks, and you had your local newspaper that, you know, people attended to those things, and now you've got hundreds of stations and fewer newspapers. We're losing newspapers, but the choices with the internet are so broad, sometimes it's just hard, I think, for people to, as Greg says, make those choices.
And we have to be selective. We have to make choices, yes.
Greg, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. I want to give Nathaniel a chance in Menominee to join in. Nathaniel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good.
I just wanted to, first off, I had two questions. My first question was, both of you, what would be your favorite element?
My favorite element? Right now I'd say zirconium because it's element number 40, and it corresponds to the anniversary of my being a UW faculty member. So it's hard to do favorites. You know, there are essential elements. I mean, carbon is important. Oxygen is important.
I was going to say oxygen. That was my number one.
Yeah, I kind of understand what you're trying to ask here, but it's very difficult for me to say this one is my favorite. So
okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. So
and then my other question was, do you know any information or do you know where I could find some information regarding kind of reverse cybernetics in terms of, like, instead of having mechanics that help biological things, in terms of using biological things to help mechanical things? Like, an example of this would be, like, the ideas behind using, I believe it's enzymes, which are the little things that help cells split by surrounding it and absorbing the heat. And they were talking about using something like that in fusion so we could create cold fusion. And I was just wondering if you knew anything else regarding, you know, biological things like that.
Well, Nathaniel, you know, you put me on the spot here.
Biomedical engineering, perhaps?
Chemical engineering. I'm going to, as I always do after being on Larry's program, I'm going to do a little research on this and put some links to websites that provide such information. But there's a wealth of richness at UW-Madison and elsewhere about these programs.
My wife Renee works in the Department of the College of Engineering at the UW and writes stories, and she's written some fascinating information on the kinds of things that you're talking about. Nathaniel, so.
And they're posted, right?
And they're posted. Yeah. So you can go to that web. You go to the College of Engineering website, and you're going to find some really cool stories. I said without any favor in my. She's a pretty good writer, but there are other writers over there, too. Thanks, Nathaniel. Scott in Sturgeon Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
I always enjoy your segment of the show. Dr. Chuck Sherry, very much. But one of the things that I've noticed and that has bothered me, I've got a high school-age daughter, and she currently is 17 years old. She's a junior. She's taking probability statistics as an elective, which I'm glad for, because one of the problems I see as a huge issue, not only is lack of scientific sophistication in the general population, but a lack of fundamental understanding of statistics. And I don't mean you need to know how to calculate something as simple as a mean, let alone a standard deviation, but I'm talking about just the understanding the fundamental concept that you can't make a statistically valid generalization based on a small sample size. People don't seem to understand that, or seem to understand particularly those who are involved in the social sciences, it seems to me, or politics, where they twist these social science sorts of studies pretty severely. They don't seem to understand this at all, and quite honestly, as a physician, my hospital administration doesn't seem to understand the issues when they use patient feedback forms and will make generalizations based on two or three feedback forms and try and couch it in statements that it's medically or that it's statistically
significant,
valid.
Yeah.
That just drives me crazy. And so I think that we need to bring those topics down into the grade school and make them mandatory rather than elective in our high schools as they currently are. And I'll take any response you have off the air.
Well, you make good comments, Scott. I appreciate what you said about my programs earlier. But you're right. You know, it's striking to me that people read in the sports section, they understand batting averages. Mm-hmm. They know about quarterback ratings. All of these are statistical pieces of information. Mm-hmm. So it's striking to me that there is this high interest in statistics, but it's focused in one area too. And maybe we should take advantage of that to try to point out that understanding risk assessment, what that is, probability. You know, when you take an insurance policy or when you buy stocks, all of these are related to statistics and probabilities and, of course, people's attitudes. So I agree. We should have additional emphasis on understanding statistics.
And sort of to go along with that, there was an associate professor of psychology at the University of Chicago that this sort of relates to, you know, I have a first grader, so this research interested me. Little girls may learn to fear math from the women who are their earliest teachers. And his was a study of first and second graders showed that female elementary school teachers who are concerned about their own math skills could be passing that along to the girls they teach. Now, in my own case, we happen to have an outstanding first grade teacher, and I'm looking at her assignments, and here she is figuring means and medians and modes in first grade. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't remember when I first got that, but it was a long time later. So there are some great teachers out there. But in general, and certainly my daughter's first grade teacher is outstanding. But in general, would you agree with this assessment?
I agree. And I love what you just said, Larry, that you look at what she's doing and you say, oh, I didn't do that, but that does not inhibit you from learning what she's doing.
Yeah.
So if we always make comparisons to what we did when we were at that age, then that's and stop there. That's not good. In fact, that to me is a stepping stone to learn along and to expand our knowledge and to inculcate an attitude, a healthy attitude toward learning in our children and the friends that our children have.
Yeah. Well, kudos to Mrs. Morozik.
Indeed.
I'll tell you what. Scott, thank you. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, with a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. I want to go back again to some of the benefits. You know, we touched on it a little bit before we go back to the phones here, the benefits of investing in research and development. I'm looking at what other countries are investing in research, especially China is a really good example. India is another good example of countries that are really
upping their investments in this area.
Well, they see what we've done.
Yeah.
They see how successful we in America are, and they want to be like us. And they understand, their leaders understand, and that investments in research and development programs and in innovations in sustainability are very, very important. And so that's what they're doing. And, you know, it's a great tribute to us because most of the people who are doing this in other countries were educated in the United States.
Here, yeah.
And I think it's just tremendous that this is happening. It's really fantastic that it's happening because it shows that our educational system, despite its complexity and diversity, is very successful. What this means to me is meeting the challenge of sustaining what we've been doing so that our native-born students can have the same access to quality education in science, in mathematics, in engineering, in history, in geography, in civics, in law. So I think these investments that the federal government and the state governments put into science and technology are very, very important. You know, in our area, Larry, University Research Park is just an outstanding example of tech transfer, technology transfer, innovation. There are incubators all over the place here. Discoveries made at the university and elsewhere have a chance then to be finding their ways to the marketplace. I think all of this is really important to continue to do, and it's good business. For many of these activities, there's a good tax write-off as well.
Well, we have callers online, and I wanted to take this email, too, and then we'll get to Dean in Madison. But Richard in Racine is not employed right now. He's an unemployed science teacher. He says Wisconsin needs to continue seeking ways to receive Race to the Top funds. What should large public schools do to show within the current structure, to show they are changing to warrant these funds?
Well, the one thing I would say to do is to look carefully at what the specifications are in the competition for Race to the Top. Everything is spelled out clearly. And this requires not only school systems, but the state government to make adjustments. One of the requirements, and whether people agree with it or not, it's there, and has to do how to gauge student progress and how to gauge teacher effectiveness. These are all controversial issues. And that's why I say we should take advantage of this and the fact that there is such a federal program to try to see what we can do to access these funds and even without the funds, you know, because by examining what we're doing now in big school systems and little school systems, we can possibly come up with modifications, changes, and improvements.
Let's turn to Dean now in Madison. Dean, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Boy, I'm so surprised I got here. Sir, the University of Wisconsin at Madison is a preeminent university. I moved here from New York City about 4 years ago, and people here don't really seem to think that it's all that special. Should the university, at least the Madison campus, become a private school?
Why would you say that, Dean?
Because I think that you spend so much time fighting the state.
Oh, no, no. This is the name of the university is the University of Wisconsin-Madison, right? The University of Wisconsin system. We're a state institution. We're not a state institution dash 20% supported by the state. We appreciate the support from the state. We would like more support from the state. But to privatize the university, I think, is contrary to the great traditions of excellence that have been successful in Wisconsin to make the university what you say it is today. I'm a strong advocate of public education at the graduate level, undergraduate level, and pre-college level. It doesn't mean that we don't use advantage. We take advantage and use the generosity of donors who support these activities. I'm for that. But to privatize the university, I think would be contrary to the Wisconsin idea. It would be contrary to the great success that you cite, having seen it, you know, being here, what did you say, four years?
Yeah.
I don't think people around here take it for granted. I don't take it for granted. I work very hard. My colleagues work very hard to excel in the research and teaching that we do, but we also engage in communicating what we do to the public. And the state legislature and the governor and the staff of the governor, we have to keep talking to them. We have to keep working with them. They, I think, by and large, appreciate the same thing that you appreciate, Dean. What is missing is the manifestation of that appreciation. And by that I mean providing funds for continuing the excellence that we have.
And I think the state right now does contribute about 20%, if I'm not mistaken, to the operation of the university. So it's still an important, although we probably like to see more, it's still an important part of the total budget.
But you know why it's 20%, Larry? It's for, among other reasons, that we are so successful in securing funds from elsewhere.
Yeah. So faculty members.
Faculty members are very successful in what we do as a world-class university. This does not mean that the citizens of Wisconsin should give up on having a flagship institution in the state of Wisconsin. The generosity of the people of Wisconsin across decades is second to none in terms of why we are the way we are at UW-Madison and elsewhere in Wisconsin.
But Sam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you, Larry.
And take a look at his website, www.scifun.org. Lots of great information. He always includes something. Questions that might come up during the show, he tries to look into them later on and put them up on the website. So it's always fun to have Bassam with us. And I promise he will be back and we will talk again some more. But we're going to turn our attention now to saving for your retirement. Frank Armstrong, our guest, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.